The Senate Tax Committee will come to order. We do have very important business this morning. But as soon as we're done, we have fun business, which is we're going to have a little cake to celebrate. And hopefully all of you will be back at the end if you're not staying all the way through. We're trying to make the technical and policy bill very exciting by adding cake at the end. First up, we have Senate File 2538, and this is the resolution to Congress to pass Marketplace Equity or Marketplace Fairness Act, and I'm hoping this will move fairly quickly. We do have some testifiers here. I know Lisa Frenette is here to speak in favor of that resolution. Good morning.
Morning, Senator. Hi, Madam Welcome. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much. My name is Lisa Frenette, and I'm representing the International Council of Shopping Centers on this resolution. I'd just like to say a few quick words about it, that we're pleased that the legislature supports the local retail and fairness in the marketplace. For too long, brick-and-mortar retail has suffered from an unfair competitive disadvantage, and the federal government at this point is standing in the way due to the Quill decision of making any changes to fairness in e-commerce.
Thank you, Ms. Frenette. The act is being passed out now. It's the Marketplace Equity Act of 2011. Do members have questions or comments about this for Ms. Frenette or anyone else? Members, I've learned that when it comes to the affiliate nexus bills that have been passed in other states, that the reaction from the internet seller has been to eliminate the relationship with the affiliate in the state, making it even less clear the connection for taxation purposes. And I think we should be acutely aware of that. It's one of the reasons why I think that we should be proceeding with this resolution for certain. The best answer is at the federal level. There may be other answers, but the best answer, I think, is at the federal level. Questions or comments about Senate File 2538?
Madam Chair, are you going to take any testimony on this?
I have asked if other folks would like to testify. You're welcome to testify if you'd like.
How you doing?
Madam Chair.
Senator Russ.
I wonder if I could ask a witness a question.
Certainly. Ms. Frenette?
Yes, please.
Senator Russ.
This topic has been discussed and discussed and discussed, as you well know, and I was wondering if your association has a position or opinion on affiliate nexus legislation.
Ms. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Rest, the International Council of Shopping Centers supports the Minnesota retailers and the other organizations. Passage of this bill as it moves forward, we do not feel that the two are mutually exclusive. We feel that they can work together.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you. Andy, do you want to testify this morning?
Excuse me.
Welcome,
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Steinhoff, representing the Minnesota Retailers Association. And just a couple comments with regard to the resolution. I guess we would say we're supportive of the resolution. We're supportive of a federal solution ultimately. However, as you know, Madam Chair, Minnesota is already part of Streamline. We've been part of Streamline for about 10 years. So this resolution is a little bit redundant when it comes to, you know, we're already part of the Streamline sales tax solution. There's also been numerous resolutions passed throughout the country from different states that, you know, support a federal solution and whatnot. However, we've only seen movement on this issue when states have started passing nexus laws. Up until states have started taking action, there's been pretty much no movement. This has been idle in Congress. Now we've seen three bills introduced. We've seen some movement in Congress. We've seen some support in Congress. But we also have seen numerous states pass nexus bills. Also, there's maybe a little bit of a misconception that Amazon cuts off those affiliate relationships. They have done that in some states, but they've also agreed to collect the sales tax in about six other states. So it's a little inconsistent on how they do that. But they have agreed to collect, I believe it's in six other states, too. So I just want to make that clear. So, you know, we're supportive of a federal solution, too, but we feel to move the meter to get Congress to act, states need to be acting. Because Congress has not really taken a look at this issue until states have started passing nexus bills. And we've had numerous states do that. And we also feel it's very important that Minnesota still considers the affiliate nexus bill that we have before you already. That is our number one objective, and we feel that's the number one way to get Congress to move, especially when we have two of the largest retailers headquartered in this state and 68,000 other retailers in this state. So, Madam Chair, with that, thank you, and I can take questions if there is any.
And Mr. Steinhofer, I'm sure I don't have to remind you that this committee acted last year not to pass along the internet sales tax approach that would change the relationship in the state of Minnesota. And I think based on what I'm hearing from you and from Ms. Frenette, there's no reason not to go forward with a resolution, is there, to Congress?
No, ma'am. I don't feel there's any reason to go forward. We just don't feel it moves the meter a whole lot. It just hasn't in the past.
It's not as much as you'd like, but it's a step forward, correct?
Madam Chair.
We would consider it a neutral step because we were already part of Streamline, but we are supportive of a federal solution. Ultimately, but to get to that federal solution, we feel these nexus laws are important to get Congress to pay attention.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Steinhoff, you know, I guess to the chair, I think we can wait. We would have to wait forever for Congress. So I support the resolution, but I'd like to see us do more. I don't think this will be the last time we talk about this session. I hope it's not the last time we talk about this session. And members, we had a very good hearing with Mr. Steinhoff and some others in the Jobs Committee earlier this year. And there's some strong support to help you, Mr. Steinhoff. So I hope we will continue to do that and to work on that and to be open to it. So as you said, this is a step. I'd like to take more of a leap. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Michelle, I hate to disagree with you. Forever seems like a very long time. I hope that you're wrong about that. And I hope we can expect more from our congressional delegation. They should go back to Congress. And they should do their job, which is to manage this issue. And I think they have let everybody down in not doing it. And they shouldn't be waiting for states on a case-by-case basis to adopt plans here. They should be doing their job. Senator Hoffman, would you move to pass, to recommend 2538, Senate File 2538, and refer the bill to the Rules Committee for consideration?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All in favor of Senator Hoffman's motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. So adopted. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senate File 2136 is the Omnibus Technical Policy and Non-Budget Tax Bill. Again, we had to add cake to make it exciting, but you're all welcome to stay, members, staff, and guests as well, and I hope you will. But we do have some business with respect to this bill. First, I'd like to ask, there is a delete all amendment. It is the A7. And members, I would ask for your support in adopting the A7 as an author's amendment to put the bill in the form that I believe it should be for consideration by this committee.
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The A7 is adopted. Thank you, Senator Bach. We do have... If I could ask counsel to very briefly summarize what's in the bill. And I'll begin with you, Ms. Pollack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill contains 10 articles. The first is Article 1, and it contains the income and corporate franchise tax provisions from the department policy and technical bills, and there are no changes to those provisions. Article 2 contains department policy and technical provisions on estate taxes. There are a couple of changes from what was adopted last week, and these are recommendations from the Department of Revenue regarding the qualified small business property issue and the recapture tax issue. There was some language in the amendment adopted last week that the department had determined was an expansion of the exclusion and therefore would have scored as a revenue loss. So that language has been changed to clarify so that there will be no revenue loss. And Mr. Sylvia has Article 3.
Article 3 is the department's policy and technical bill relating to property tax. There are no changes made to this article since the committee heard this bill last week.
Any further discussion? Is there a motion now?
Article 4.
Article 4?
Mr. Chair, Article 4 contains the Department of Policy and Technical Sales and Use Tax and Special Tax provisions. I should note that there's one issue. The Section 2 of this article was removed with the A4 amendment to Senate File 2435 last week, and it was just not picked up in this Delete All amendment.
Article 5 is the Department's Policy and Technical Bill relating to mineral and mineral taxation. There have been no changes made to these sections since the committee last heard this.
The same applies to Article 6, which is Department Policy and Technical Miscellaneous Provisions. No changes have been made since the committee adopted these provisions last week.
Article 7 is the Economic Development Provisions Cleanup. Likewise, there have been no changes to this bill, originally Senate File 2246, since the committee heard this. Article 8 is the Public Finance section. Sections 1 through 7 are as the committee heard in the original bill, Senate File 841. The remaining three sections relate to bonding for the city of St. Paul, Itasca County, and the city of Woodbury, and the committee heard all three of those files.
Article 9 is sales tax provisions. Section 1 contains the liquor reporting requirement provisions from Senate File 2083. This was Senator Michelle's bill that we heard last week. Sections 2 through 7 are local sales taxes and local hospitality taxes. These are Section 2 from Senate File 2174, Senator Howe's bill, Senate File 2211, the Rochester lodging tax provisions from Senator Senjum, Senator Peterson's bill for the St. Cloud area city's local option sales tax, that was Senate File 1968, the Clearwater local option sales tax, Senate File 2155, Senator Koch's bill, and the Proctor hospitality tax, which was Senator Bach's bill, Senate File 1455. Section 8 is a new provision for a solicitor nexus study on the affiliate nexus issue. And then Section 9 is a repealer of the Rochester food and beverage tax that was contained in, or that was referenced in Section 3.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Marty.
Council, could you tell me, I mean, is there, and maybe this is not a Senate Council question, but the Rochester lodging tax increase and the repealer of the food and beverage tax, revenue numbers for what that does? I don't know who has it. I mean, what the impact is, how much they're collecting from the 2% increase in the lodging tax. Is there somebody who could?
Senator Marty, I can't tell you that, unfortunately. Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, I don't have that information, but perhaps.
If we could before the end, I'd just be curious
get
how
that
much
for you
gain and lose.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 10 is property tax. There are seven sections. Section 1 and 2 relates to Senator Roebling's bill that requires the truth in taxation notice and the property tax notice require a listing of special taxing districts that exceed 25% of the total. Section 3 is Senator Ingebrigtsen's City of Vergas aggregate materials tax. Sections 4 and Section 6 are new, and they relate to local government aid and penalties. Section 6 authorizes the payment of local government aid for 2011 to cities that did not qualify or did not meet the reporting required deadline set by the state auditor, provided that all necessary information is submitted to the state auditor by March 31st of 2012. Section 4 also authorizes a graduated forfeiture of local government aid for cities that did not submit the required financial documents to the state auditor by the required deadline. As it stands right now, if they do not submit the required paperwork, local government aid is not certified in this. Provides a graduated forfeiture based on between 45 and 90 days after the required deadline.
Is there any public testimony, anyone wishing to speak for or against the bill? Well, I would imagine our committee can kick it around a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
Anyone who wishes to speak? Yes. Senator Squire.
Yes, Chair, I have the A13 amendment.
It's
Senator Skoy, as the amendment is being handed out, would you like to begin?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When the bill was presented to us on page 71 of the delete all, there was discussion about the commissioner when they were filing electronically for wage levy disclosure forms. And we thought it would be appropriate to put a waiver mechanism in place so that if the employers had difficulty or were unable to fulfill that electronic filing, that there would be a mechanism for the commissioner to give those people a waiver. And this A13 amendment is the process that we came up with.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Does everyone have the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion by committee? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A14 amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the City of St. Paul was in front of the committee with their capital improvement bonding request. They were asking to have it the sunset extended. The bill does that. They had made a request that we would increase their authority from the current $20 million to $30 million. I thought that perhaps $30 million was a little bit high, but understanding the nature of inflation, I think the City of St. Paul has done a good job of managing their debt level. They're nowhere near to the cap that I would offer an amendment to raise their debt limit from $20 million to $25 million and not the $30 million that they had requested. So that's the A14 amendment.
Is there any discussion about the amendment? Senator Skoy, is there any, have you had a discussion with the chair on this amendment? Is she for it or against it?
Mr. Chair, I have not talked to Senator Ortman about this provision, so I don't know where she is exactly on that. If you would like, I can wait until she's back in the chair to offer
this. Could you please?
Yeah, I'll lay the 14th Amendment, withdraw the A14th Amendment.
For Senator Skoy withdraws the A14th Amendment. Is there other discussion regarding the bill? Yes. Or any further amendments? Senator Rosen? Senator Bach. Staff will pass out the A16.
Wait, we just tabled it for a minute because there's further discussion.
Just technical?
Yes, actually.
I look like a deleto. Is that?
Senator Bach?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment relates to the taconite aid that school districts receive from the production of iron ore. And because the mining companies do not pay property taxes, they pay this production tax that then gets distributed so many cents per ton to school districts. And a school district or the Department of Education sets the levy based on the amount of aid, a levy reduction based on the amount of aid that the school districts received from in taconite aid. And the levy is reduced by 95% of the previous year's aid they received from the mining companies. The problem is created in that if production goes up, the levy, the department doesn't know that until after the levy is set. So there ends up being excess aid that comes to the schools that the schools can't keep because under law they have to, if there's excess over the levy, they have to actually give it to the cities and towns. So they don't actually get to keep it, but the next year's levy is set at 95% of the total production number. And some of the money that the levy is reduced by is actually money the cities did or the school districts didn't get because it was excess over the previous year's levy. And as excess, they weren't allowed to keep it, so it went to cities and towns.
So what the amendment does is takes that provision out and just says that their levy is going to be reduced by the actual amount of aid they receive. And the only person in the room that probably understands this is nobody. And if Joanne Zoff is watching on television, she understands it. But it reduces the levy by the actual amount they received.
Senator Ortman's going to take a crack at it, Senator Bach.
I did speak with Senator Bach about this, and I think it was intended to be a one-time hold.
Originally.
Back to 95%, and then it was intended to continue going forward. And it's had an unintended consequence, the way it was drafted, to hold and to reduce the application to the 95% level every year, and that was never intended. And I agree it was never intended when it was passed.
And, Madam Chair, it actually is going to save the general fund a little bit of money because it actually is going to – it will recognize the additional aid that is produced so that the levy actually will go down some, which is actually a small savings, I believe, to the general fund.
Madam Chair and Senator
Senate Council, would you
Bach, this is that's true. The levy will go down, and so the difference in the made up for it, or the difference is between the 95 and the 100%. On the general fund impact is $351,000. We probably should send this through education to the education department through a fiscal note process to see if this would, if it's shifted, it may have a positive impact on the general fund because of the reduction in levies. So at this point, there is a general fund impact. We're unsure which way it would go.
Mr. Chair.
Right. Senator Ortman.
I would recommend that we ask the Department of Education to prepare a fiscal note on this so we know.
Right. Madam Chair, I'm not trying to do anything that creates a cost, and I guess if there is somehow, if we don't know if plus or minus, if it creates a cost in the bill, I'm willing to withdraw it on the floor if we need to. But.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think she believes it's going to be a positive impact. So.
Well, I think it may be.
Yeah. I think the fiscal note will help us make a decision, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion on the A-16 amendment? Hearing none, Senator Bach renews adoption of the A-16. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Could I offer the A-11 amendment, please?
Senator Ortman moves the A-11 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-11 has three provisions in it. It deletes one of the sections from the Department of Revenue policy bill that was adopted last week. It was part of a drafting error. Number two, lines 1.5 through 1.13, clarifying changes to the local sales tax laws about when we administer the lodging tax and what happens with the local taxes. We want to clarify that the Department of Revenue will not be administering the application of the local lodging taxes. If folks want to do that, they should come back with a bill next year, but it was not included in the changes that we made last year, and folks have asked us to clarify that. And then the third thing on line 1.15, I have an oral amendment to make on that, but what it does is it reduces the 2012 LGA appropriation for those late filers. If you remember, we had three cities here and then several others that have actually completed their accounting and had need to have their LGA restored. And so this is a technical correction to the dollar amount to make sure that we provide for all the LGA that was expected. And members, I'd like to offer an oral amendment, Mr. Chair, to the A-11 amendment at line 1.15, delete the numbers 726,719. And insert 745048.
Sir Ortman moves an oral amendment on the A-11 amendment on line 1.15, deleting the dollar amount $726,719 and inserting $745,048. Everyone understand the amendment? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Ortman,
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A-11 amendment as amended.
Senator Senator Ortman moves A11 amendment as amended. Any further discussion? Senator Bott.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, is that amount for all those cities that were listed on the, not just for the three, but for all those cities?
Senator Rosen, for all those that have complied.
That have complied.
This restores their LGA, and then we've changed the penalty provisions going forward so that no city loses more than 50% of their LGA. So regardless of whether they file those accounting documents or not, they will still have 50% of their LGA. And we've got a list of the cities. But the requirement was they have to have it submitted by March 31, and they get full funding. And that's the 745048 for all those cities.
Okay, fabulous. Okay.
Any further discussion? Senator Ortman renews her motion regarding the A11 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Bott.
I have the A15 amendment.
A15 amendment. Staff will pass out the A15 amendment.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry this is a surprise to everybody. Senator Saxog called this to my attention yesterday. It's a bill that he had. He currently represents International Falls. International Falls has a swimming pool levy to cover the operational costs of their swimming pool. And what they learned is last August when the State High School League came out with the new facility requirements are actually set by the National Federation of High School Sports, and Minnesota adopted them. Last August, the State High School League announced that swimming pools had to be at a minimum 4 feet deep on the shallow end. By this fall's swimming seas competitions, they have about 60 kids in their swimming program. And their pool is 3 feet 6 inches deep on the shallow end. So they have a levy for the operation of the pool. They would like to be able to levy to make the improvements to the pool so they can continue to have a swimming program. So what the amendment does is allows them to levy for the improvements that they need to make the pool qualify. And it is not over $200,000, so there's a limit on it, and the specific purposes are for deepening the swimming pool and repairing the structural integrity of the pool as a result of that. This will be a one-time levy just for these costs. It actually saves a little bit of money in FY13, about $24,000, because it saves some money on the property tax refund program. It saves some additional money because the levy will be a little bit larger in 2014 of almost $72,900. And over 3 years, it's actually totally revenue neutral to the state's general fund.
Senator Bach, you want to speak to the timing on this? I mean, we didn't have a hearing. Was there a bill?
There was a bill, Madam Chair. It was heard in the House. I don't know if it was included anywhere. And I think it might have been actually heard in the Education Committee. And I believe it didn't get a hearing here in the Senate. And I don't know what. All I know is Senator Saxog made me aware of it yesterday.
And Senator Bach, I'm hearing about it for the first time today, as are many of the members of the committee. I think that's unfortunate. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for somebody who serves five counties and only has two indoor pools in five counties, I would be interested in knowing how many other pools are affected by this new ruling, because this bill is very specific to this pool, international border, you know, density of 10 or fewer persons per square mile. If this is going to affect a lot of other pools, which there aren't a lot of indoor pools now, especially out in greater Minnesota, I think we should take a more broad look at this.
Madam Chair, there are, to Senator Rosen's comment, there are actually only four school districts in this state that are eligible to have a swimming pool levy for operational purposes because of how the language is crafted. So there are only four schools in the state that currently levy for operation of a swimming pool. Or authorized. I'm not sure they all even do, but they're authorized.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been trying to get one of the two authorized. for a while. So I would prefer to just take a good hard look at this going forward.
Senator Rosen, other thoughts, comments, questions? Is there anyone here that would like to testify on the A-15 amendment, either for or against it? Senator Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to wondering if Senator Bach might know the reason. Is this a safety issue that they need to deepen the pool to meet the requirements?
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, the memo that I received said that the State High School League, it's a State High School League mandate that the pool be 4 feet deep on the shallow end. First time that it's going to be in place is for next fall swimming season. I'm sure there are other pools that have this issue. They just maybe haven't contacted their legislator, or maybe all pools are 4 feet deep on the shallow end. I don't know. But for whatever reason, the Natural Falls one is 3 feet 6 inches.
Senator Howe.
And Madam Chair, I think that's, you know, the question is how many pools in our state does this affect, and what's the rationale for it? I'd just like to have a little more information, and if it's going to be a difficulty for obviously it's a difficulty for these schools that have access to the swimming pool levy, but I think we probably need to take a little more comprehensive look at it and see if there's additional. I'd just like to have some more information before we just out a few.
Madam Chair. I don't know if there are other schools or not, but I know there are only four that have access to do it through a levy currently. So, I mean, it's up to the committee. I just thought it would be something worth doing for the kids in International Falls so they can have the swimming that those 60 kids have been enjoying. And apparently there's going to be some limitation on their ability to do that next year.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Bach, I'm just trying to imagine how much it would cost to deepen one end of a pool 6 inches or 4 inches or whatever it is and not change the structural integrity of the entire pool. And this could get maybe rather expensive, especially for older pools. Older pools that right now are working, wouldn't it be easier to make a variance or allow a variance for the pool that might be 3.5 feet to have the State High School League recognize that? Are they a higher authority than the Minnesota Legislature?
I don't believe
Senator
that.
Senator
Bach. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I don't believe they are, but you'd have to ask Mr. Arnson about that. But the maximum is $200,000 that they can levy for this purpose. And they're not going to get this work done without this language, because as a result of the school shift, their fund balance is in a very precarious situation, like many school districts that are out borrowing money because of the shift. So, all we're really doing here is allowing them to deepen their pool and levy themselves to do it. And they're currently levying for the pool purpose now. It's just for operational costs, not for the improvements.
Well, Senator Bach, I think you catch us all at a disadvantage here, because we don't really have testifiers here that we can ask about this particular project. And as far as I know, there was no hearing request. I can't be certain of that, but I don't believe that there was. We would have accommodated anybody that had a local project like this. But I think the committee has taken a position that when it comes to bills like this, we do want to have more of a comprehensive conversation about it and try and make it a particular provision like this of more general application. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for somebody who did swim high school and college competitively, I am all about indoor swimming pools and teaching kids to swim. And I have been trying for years to get to allow schools to levy for their swimming pools. I think that's something that we need to take a look at more broadly and see how many pools this would affect. Because if this is, as Senator Ress, going up against the high school league might be tough, we might just have to accommodate this requirement to go forward, because swimming is absolutely imperative that they have these options to learn how to swim here, and to be competitive with that. But I'm just reticent about, you know, singling out just one pool when there's other pools that are struggling out there and school pools that need some help, especially with their levies. So,
thank you. Further comments or questions? All those in favor of the A-15 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 No. I believe the noes have it. The A-15 is not adopted, Senator Bach. Other amendments for the Senate file 2136.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
I have A-4.
It's coming, Senator Chamberlain. Do you want to discuss the A-4 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is for cities that currently own property for resale. Currently under statute, those cities, that property is exempt for from property tax, depending on where you're at, 9 years to 15 years per statute. So what this does is it deletes some of that language and just allows 15 years. That property be exempt for 15 years from property tax. And if there's some other questions, I believe we have a testifier who could answer some of those as well. Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson, welcome back to the committee. You've already done very well in this committee, so hope you can keep it up here this morning. Senator Peterson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. What this bill does is, as Senator Chamberlain said, just simply expand that property tax exemption up to 15 years. One of the communities I represent, I've been approached by those citizen representatives because we have a number of properties that are being held for economic development, and we just recently added an economic development authority, and so many of these properties were transferred from the HRA to the city with the creation of this economic development authority, and a number of the property tax bills on those properties are due next year, and our residents are just questioning why should they pay property tax to themselves, so to speak, on those properties that are clearly have an interest being held for economic development. So this bill just extends that to 15 years rather than 9 years.
Just a little bit of background, members. Senator Gazelka brought us a bill last year that we adopted. That was the change from 8 years to 9 years, where a city would not have to pay property taxes on property that they are developing. And I think it's a pretty big leap from 8 years to 15 years. You could say it's from 9 years to 15 years, but this is the city then not paying property taxes on property it is holding and owning for purposes of development. Senator Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would have some concerns with this, too. And when you have Port Authority land and other land that's in there for economic, to say that you're going to, regardless of whether the city's paying taxes on it, that tax base is being spread around all the other taxpayers anyhow, regardless. I think what this is designed to do is at least put a little bit of emphasis on that, if you don't have it back into the private hands in 9 years, or you don't have it developed in 9 years, 15 years is a long time. That's a big leap. I would certainly be supportive because of the economic conditions here. I think that's why we made the change last year to extend it a little bit. But I think this is going too far for larger cities to extend this to 15 years. I would certainly be willing to extend it a few years, but I think going to 15 is too long. And you need to put the pressure on the Economic Development Agency to have a plan in place. What happens when we run out of the time where we need to start paying taxes on it, or when we need to start paying interest on the money that we've either taken from our water or sewer fund or somewhere else? And, we have to make sure we're making good decisions when we start a redevelopment project. And I think given a decade and a half is too long.
Senator Howe, I have the same impression that when the city owns property in the city and is not paying property taxes, those tax burdens get shifted to those that do pay taxes, and they pay a higher burden. And I think we have to be cautious of that. We were hard-pressed to do 9 years, Senator Peterson. The committee may be disposed to do 10, But I think 15 seems like a very big change in policy. Do you want to address that, Senator Peterson?
Sure. Yeah, Madam Chair and members and Senator Howell, I would like to argue, I mean, this situation is particularly different because the City of St. Cloud, in an effort to do what you just described, to streamline our economic development, to have a one-stop shop for anybody that's interested in coming into our area there in central Minnesota, we recently created this EDA. It's an economic development authority. Previously, until just a year ago, that was being handled by the HRA, our Housing and Redevelopment Authority. And so our community went through this whole process and a community discussion, a process that took as I served on the City Council and the HRA board myself, I would say it was easily 18 months to 24 months discussion that our community went through. And I would say our residents are absolutely behind this issue. For example, I would say the property tax bill that one city in particular, St. Cloud, would be faced with in very short order is about $300,000 because of this issue. And I think the situation we're in there is, like I said, we have the community support and hope that really going from 9 to 15 is the 4 years. I understand you did another year last year, but this is the unique situation that one of my communities that I represent is in right now. So,
Senator Rust?
Madam Chair, I wonder if the committee would be amenable to adding one more year. I would feel better about this amendment. And to that, who offered the amendment?
Senator Chamberlain did.
To Senator Chamberlain's amendment, I would offer the following amendment, and that is to restore the stricken language. And then on line 1.9, delete 9 and insert 10.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson.
And members, I was just informed that the House actually expanded it by 2 years. That's what's in the House language right now. So if there's any way the committee would consider going to 2 years rather than 1 year, then we would match it up to what's gone on in the other body at this point.
Ms. Pollack, do you want to read the amendment?
Madam Chair, yes, the language on lines 1.9 to 1.11, the stricken language would be reinstated, except on line 1.9, the word 9 would be deleted and the word 11 would be inserted.
No,
that's
no.
Not my amendment. 10.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Senator Rust, is that what you intend?
Yes, speak. Madam Chair. And I understand that something different was done in the House, but I think 10 is more appropriate, and I would ask for Senator Howell to his reasoning for concurring with 10 rather than 11.
There are many hands up that I'd like to hear from, and I'm constantly looking this way, but I've got to look over to the left every now and then. And Senator Chamberlain, I'm going to ask him to comment first since this is his amendment, but Senator Dibble will hear from you, and we'll hear from everybody on this issue before we vote. So, Senator Chamberlain.
On the left. Well, we would certainly prefer to keep it as is, but as always, we're willing to listen, Madam Chair, and I'll defer to Senator Peterson for any other explanation.
Thank you. Senator Dibble?
Similar question, Madam Chair, about restoring the stricken language so that properties, so that it doesn't lift this cap for all cities. Is that how they handled it in the House? Is that agreeable to you, Senator Peterson?
Senator Peterson.
I'm sorry, Senator Dimmel, you said you would support removing the cap for all cities? And for the one?
No, I was wondering how you felt.
Senator Dibble. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, I would. I supported your original amendment, so I'm perfectly fine with the with all this. I'm really liberal on this question.
On the left, Peterson. Senator Dibble.
You're on the left.
Senator Peterson, how are you feeling about the 10 years? I think you might get some support, but I'm hearing the committee. I hope you're hearing the committee that 15 is probably a little uncomfortable for us. Senator Peterson?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would be grateful for a one-year extension. It'll just motivate me to work even harder to be back here next year.
We want you to have every motivation. At least I do, Senator Peterson. Senator Howell.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Senator Russ's amendment to take it to 10 years might align a little bit with some government financing issues, too. I believe that a city can borrow from its funds, its internal funds, like its water and sewer fund or any kind of a fund, and not pay interest for a period of 10 years. It's either 8 or 10 years. I think it's 10 years. So I think this amendment would line up with that. And so I think 10 years would be better than 11, and I would support that.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not sure why we moved it from 8 to 9 and why we're here this year talking about moving it again. So I'm actually think the current law is fine. I mean, cities acquiring property and taking it off the tax rolls is serious business. And allowing them to be able to speculate on out even 9 years is a long time for them to speculate on property that they deliberately took off the tax rolls.
Well, and Senator Bach, some of us had a little heartburn over the change from 8 to 9 years. It seems like a long time. I'm not sure at this point what the distinction is between 9 and 10 years, but I'm concerned about the distinction between 9 and 11 years. I'm very concerned about 9 and 15 years. And so I think, you know, this is one of those issues where we may have bipartisan support or opposition. I'm not really sure how the vote will go. Senator Peterson, do you have another testifier here?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. My guest is Michael Williams, the city administrator for the city of St. Cloud.
Welcome, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I wanted to offer a little bit of information on how the city of St. Cloud operates in its economic development lands. And I think it's similar to what other cities do, and I know the League is supportive of language that extends this limit. We've had a longstanding method in St. Cloud of having a private nonprofit that's taxable help us acquire lands. And they actually hold the lands for quite some time until we get that land to the point of being developed. So and those pro formas are usually about 10 years that we hope to sell that land. In this economy, we simply haven't been able to sell any land for 4 or 5 years. So the extension is very important to allow us to hang on to that original pro forma. And we've been very successful in the past with our business parks. We've sold land, put good businesses there, employed people, and increase the tax base. And as Senator Peterson suggests, our community, including our counties and school districts, are very supportive of these types of efforts.
Well, and yet, Mr. Williams, what you're asking us for is a change in state policy because of the particular concerns of the city of St. Cloud. And I think the fact that it has statewide application is part of the concern here. It might be good for St. Cloud, and it might make a lot of sense there, but it might not make sense in other communities. And in my view, any time a city or municipality is going to buy property, I think that they should be very cautious about the impact in the community and to the taxpayers. And I know the city of St. Cloud is very careful with those purchases. And I'm sure that they have done a very good job here of managing their city's business. I'm just concerned about a statewide application of what's good for the city of St. Cloud. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, could you tell me how much money off the bottom line are we talking about?
Mr. Williams.
Senator, Madam Chair, if all of the lands that the city holds in two industrial parks were taxable today, it could be upwards of $300,000. Now, immediately, we're looking at about two-thirds of that would end up on the tax roll. So it would be a significant burden to our economic development authority that had the economy not shifted, probably would not have been there. Since the new law passed, I think it was some 10 years ago, our private nonprofit that, again, is taxable is hanging on to some of that land currently so that it doesn't get taken off the tax rolls until it's to a point of being saleable for industrial or business property.
Madam Chair, this significant burden that you say, if we advance this, then that significant burden, is that transferred to the rest of the property taxpayers area?
Madam Chair and Senator, it would be, you know, it's property that is not on the tax rolls now. So however we would want to view that, yes, but in part it would be us paying ourselves as well.
Thank you. Other questions or comments about Senator Rust's oral amendment to the A4? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment to the A4 signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No. No.
The ayes have it. Oral amendment is adopted, and the amendment authorizes a period of up to 10 years and reinstates all of the other language for the cities of population 5,000 or under. Senator Rust, correct, Council? All right.
Chair, yes.
Other questions, comments regarding the A4 as amended? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No. No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor signify by raising your hand. I almost said your right hand. And all those opposed?
Ooh, that was close. It passes 6-5.
There being 7 ayes and 5 noes, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rust.
I have the A17 amendment.
We will hand that out. Senator Rust, you want to introduce the amendment?
Sure. Last week, I believe it was, we heard Senator Hall's bill on behalf of Hennepin County's ERF, the Environmental Response Fund, asking for the sunset to be extended.
Senator Rust, could you speak a little louder?
Sure.
We're having a hard time hearing you.
Last week, we heard Senator Hall's bill regarding Hennepin County's Environmental Response Fund program. And the bill was to extend the sunset. Senator Marty introduced an amendment at that time or for consideration of also reinstating that authority for Ramsey County. And that is what this amendment does, to include Ramsey County as well as Hennepin County in extending the sunset to 2018.
Thank you, Senator.
And there are people here to testify again, but I think that that testimony was recent enough that we don't need to repeat it unless there are questions.
I think not, unless there's new information or unless members have questions for the previous testifiers. Hopefully all members understand what we're talking about. We're talking about the extending the sunset on the Environmental Response Fund, which is based upon the mortgage deed tax in Hennepin and Ramsey County that set an extra tax on top of the statewide tax for purposes of development of these environmental response funds. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, I would like to have a little bit more comprehensive review about this. And I think extending out to 2018 is too far, but I'm willing to extend it some. And I would say I will offer an oral amendment to Senator Rest's A-17 amendment, and that would be at line 1.6, strike 2018 and insert 2015, and at line 1.10, strike 2018 and insert 2015. And I think that will give us a chance to bring this back for a little more comprehensive review. We're extending the authority here for the metro area, and I think I think we need to pay particular attention when it comes to property taxes and, taxing authority, and that will give this body a chance to review this and have a little more comprehensive review on it. So I would be supportive of that, and I'd hope members would support that. And I have talked to, the people who have advocated for this and let them know what my intentions were, and they seem to be in agreement of that they could work with that.
Senator Howe, you would be doing the proverbial kick the can down the road amendment here. Senator Howe.
It's not
yes.
As far.
Just
halfway down the road.
Halfway. Half
the can. More than halfway
at least
down
not
the road.
Down the road for 5 years.
More than halfway down the road here.
Not halfway. Two-fifths of the way.
Kicking the can into the other
40%
yard.
40% of the way.
Senator Limmer says it's kicking the can to the other yard. It might be. Senator Russ.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe has assured me he would support the underlying amendment with this change, and so I'm willing to reluctantly accept it.
A member's questions or comments? Seeing none. All those in favor of the oral amendment to the A-17 amendment. So changing the A-17 from 2018 application and renewal to 2015. So all those in favor of the Howe oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is adopted. Now, before us, we have the A-17 amendment as adopted, which would extend the tax authority through 2015. Questions or comments from the members? All those in favor of the A-17 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The chair is in doubt. All those in favor signify by raising your hand. And all those opposed, raise your hand. There being 8 ayes and 4 nays, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A8 amendments.
Senator Rosen, would you like to?
Madam Chair, this deals with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and it's to amend the carry forward and reallocation provisions of the Minnesota Bond Allocation Act, which need to be proposed because the municipal bond market has been very challenging in the last few years, and the entitlement issuers have unallocated balances for 2011 that would be lost without a change to the current law. So the feds set a limit or a volume cap on the amount of the tax-exempt private activity bonds that can be issued in each state, and this limit is based on the population. So the federal law allows a longer carry-forward period that is allowed under current state law. And if the changes are not made, then hundreds of millions of dollars of federal bonding authority will be lost to the state. So this has been agreed to by all the state entitlement and other issues of bond allocations obligations that are subject to the annual volume caps, such as MMB, Housing Finance, Deed, Rural Finance Authority, Office of Higher Ed, Public Facilities Authority, the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and Dakota County. And there is no fiscal note to this, and it should be somewhat simple. There is no cost to the state, increased cost to the state.
And so, Senator Rosen, what we're doing is changing Minnesota law regarding the bonding authority, the application of the bonds at the federal level.
Right. So we can take advantage of those bond allocations.
And we did similar things in the underlying bill as well to make sure that we conformed as closely as possible to the federal standards and took advantage of whatever federal bond programs were available. Senator Rust.
I have a question. I did notice that there were a couple of sections in Article 8 dealing with bond allocation. I just want to make sure that Senator Rosen's amendment is supplemental to those provisions rather than having any time of contradictory language. I see Ms. Orr saying is the way it works, but just want to make sure about that.
Yep. And Senator Rust, from my memory of developing this bill, we did not talk about student loan bonds in the underlying bill. Senator Rosen.
I was just going to say, Assistant Commissioner Tanya Orr is here. She wants to answer any of these questions, but that's right. The student loans is in this, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Other questions or comments about the A8 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The A8 is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
I have the A9 amendment.
A9. Well, we're working very hard on all these amendments, I have to say. The A9. Senator Chamberlain, if you'd introduce it.
Madam Chair, members, this amendment is for an extension of a Forest Lake TIF, looking for a 10-year extension for a mall and city hall redevelopment project. They have had some success. They have support from school district and other associations and organizations in Washington County, and they believe that the property they want to extend this on certainly is in need of redevelopment, and they believe they can they have a TIF district. The TIF district we're talking about, 21, it's currently profitable. They just want to extend this out a little bit longer so they include the development of this Northland Mall as well as City Hall. And Senator Vandeveer can give some more details on this.
Thank you. Senator Vandeveer, welcome. And Mayor Chris Johnson is here. Aaron Parrish, the city administrator, is here. And members, my understanding is this is an extension, as we've done similarly for other communities. Senator Vandeveer, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Chamberlain for offering the amendment. What the amendment seeks to do is to assist the city in revitalizing the 61 corridor. And Mayor Johnson's here, and he can explain the reasoning. But I did want to point out that we do have resolutions of support from the Washington County Board, School District 831, and Forest Lake School District, and the City of Forest Lake. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mayor Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's true, as Senator Vandeveer indicated, we are looking to extend this district. We see it as a critical component in a solution to a lot of the city's priorities. About a year ago, we started to really formally engage our citizens on what they wanted to see us do over the course of the next few years. We did a business retention and expansion program through the University of Minnesota's Economics Department, where we interviewed extensively dozens of our businesses. That data was then given to the Economics Department, and they provided recommendations to us after analyzing our data and their own information regarding the economy and markets, and made recommendations as to what we could do to help enhance the economic vitality of our community. And one of the three items that came out of that project was a task force to revitalize the Highway 61 corridor and focus on redevelopment on what have become blighted areas. In addition to that, we've done a number of community surveys over the last year, and a community conversation series where we did a number of town hall forums where we engaged our citizens and had huge responses to both the surveys and the town hall forums. And a clear message out of that as well to us was to revitalize and be proactive in redevelopment along Highway 61. And so that's what we're focusing on, and we see this as a priority for our city. One of the biggest sections of that in our town is a Northland Mall site. That, coupled with an adjacent property, makes up about 20 acres of private property right now that is certainly not living up to its highest and best use. The mall is about 90% vacant and has been for a number of years. When I first became mayor last year, my focus the first half of the year was to work with that owner to try to redevelop that site. But what has become clear is that that is not a viable redevelopable site as it currently sits. It's not on the freeway. Its size really requires an anchor tenant. And because Cub and then also Walmart and Target have come to town with grocery, putting a grocery site there is not going to happen either. And so as a result, this site is likely going to sit for another 5 or 10 years undeveloped and going into a worsening state. Along with that, our city annexed and merged into our township about 10 years ago, and there's been plans and studies done over the last 10 years to go away from these segregated small buildings that we currently have our staff divided among and going to more of a city campus. We're likely going to do that regardless. And my vision here is to say we currently have a city hall site. That is a fairly developable site. It's in downtown. It's near the lake. It would have lake views, walking distance to our lakeside park, right on our gateway trail. We have developers that we're meeting with that would like to develop that site for senior housing. We think it would be smart to move our city campus onto this site or a part of this site, redevelop the existing city hall, and the city component of this 20 acres is probably a fraction, maybe 2 or 3 acres. The reason we're in front of you today is not so much to deal with the city component, but the private side, this other 15 to 18 acres that we'd like to see redeveloped. It currently has a 100,000+ square foot mall that's sitting empty that would need to be demolished. There's soil corrections, stormwater maintenance, stormwater issues that would need to be dealt with on that site, along with the infrastructure that would serve it. That's where we see the TIF fitting perfectly. And so we're asking to extend this district to allow us to have those funds to put towards that redevelopment of private redevelopment. It goes right in line with what our feedback from our citizens have indicated to us. The City Hall site is on the north end of our town. We see that as becoming a multi-level, multi-family senior housing development that will help be a catalyst for further redevelopment in downtown by getting more demographics down there. And on the south end, we have this 20-acre site that we think the City Hall piece can be a catalyst for along with this TIF, can be a catalyst for that private redevelopment. And so that's what we're looking for. As Senator Vandeveer indicated, we have resolutions from our Economic Development Authority that have resolved to support this legislation unanimously. Additionally, our City Council, which is not always unanimous, unanimously is in support of this. I went to the county board. They also see this as a needed effort to turn around this corridor, and they supported it unanimously. And our school district went before the school board, and they, too, voted unanimously in support of this legislation. So in addition to our citizen engagement and clear message from them, our local governing bodies also see this as a positive, as it's actually going to have a net impact this redevelopment alone. We're just shifting City Hall from one site to another. We think it'll actually increase the tax base, not to mention the future development that we think this will spur on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, you have this large mall property that needs redevelopment. Why not just create a new district there? I don't understand why be able to continue to collect increment on property that's already been redeveloped. Assume the bonds have been serviced for the development purposes. Why we'd continue to collect increment when the district has done its job to develop another parcel? Why you just wouldn't create a new district? I understand you might want the cash, but I think the policy is problematic. I mean, the existing district has done what it was intended to do, and now to be able to continue to collect that increment for an additional 10 years seems a little problematic.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, thank you. Well, with respect to that, this mall site is in this district, but in addition to that, the model that we've followed is the model that was used by Oakdale, and it's very similar to the one that's in the Bloomington's legislation that's in one of the other omnibus bill. And so that's the model we followed, which is what was approved for the Oakdale Mall site, and also what's similarly being done by other cities. And so you're right. This is an existing district, but it actually is the mall site is in the district that we're asking to have extended.
So, Mr. Mayor, are you saying that this is a new project within the existing TIF district, that the first project was completed, but this one is still within the boundaries of the original?
It happens to be, yes. Yep.
Other questions or comments? Mr. Parrish, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Just to expound on Senator Bach's question, the other issue that is pertinent in terms of extending or creating a new district is that we don't currently have a developer, you know, that is intending to proceed with all facets of the project. So, you know, we certainly have stages that are ready to go, but in terms of the generation of increment, it would be more advantageous for us to utilize the existing district that is currently generating increment as opposed to creating a new district that may or may not meet some of the contemporary requirements of TIF in terms of the 3 and 5 year rules, and just really generating enough money in terms of filling the gap that does exist with all the redevelopment costs that Mayor Johnson had identified.
I get your point, Senator Bach. You could draw every TIF district to be big enough to include the entire city, and then you've always got, you know, the ability to do it and use increment, and I see that. But I think we also want to provide some kind of a solution here and authorization. I don't think that that's what the city of Forest Lake is doing. They drew this TIF district years ago, and they are still trying to redevelop that same district and need additional time. In that context, I understand what they're trying to do. Is that a fair read of what's happening here? The TIF district was drawn, you completed one portion, and now you're seeking extension to complete the other portion, Mr. Mayor?
Correct. Yep.
Thank you. Other questions or comments?
But Madam Chair, it's capturing the increment on the property that's already been developed. I mean, if there was a developer for this property and you had a project ready, I think I personally would probably think about this differently, but just to redraw the line or extend the increment when you don't actually have a project, I mean, the purpose, the TIF district has accomplished its function. And why we'd continue to collect increment, I mean, if there was an immediate project, I think we'd have something to talk about, but.
Well, Senator Bach, I thought they said they do have an immediate project that they're working on.
No, they have a need, Madam Chair, but they don't actually, they have a desire to redevelop this mall property, but I didn't hear that there actually is a developer in line that this increment would actually expend money on to do the infrastructure that's necessary for the development. They have a desire, but I don't believe they have a current developer. I just think they're a little bit ahead of themselves.
Mr. Parrish.
Chair, members of the committee, I guess the one issue with that is we have elements of the project that are ready to proceed. You know, we're in active discussions with a developer on the City Hall site for multifamily housing. You know, so that looks like, you know, that will proceed as part of the overall redevelopment. We certainly also have the City Hall component that would be ready to proceed and be a catalyst for future private redevelopment on the Northland Mall site. But again, as you look at it, and you know, with the Northland Mall project, you do have some existing tax base. The other parcels that are adjacent to that have existing tax base, and that initial phase one of development isn't enough to generate the kind of increment that you're going to need to address the redevelopment costs. And then, of course, just as the committee discussed previously, you know, there will be a component of this that we hope to proceed with in the future. In terms of the additional outlots in and around the Northland Mall that will supplement the area where the City Hall facility will go, in addition to the multifamily development that's contemplated.
Well, Madam Chair, I won't belabor this any longer, but you know, at some point, property needs to go on the tax rolls. I mean, that's what economic development is about. And eventually, the increment quits being captured. And it goes on the tax rolls, and the larger community benefits from the redevelopment. If we're just going to continue to not collect the taxes, how does the tax base ever benefit from the development? Now we're gonna this property has been redeveloped. While we're not going to collect taxes for another 10 years on it, and the greater community ends up paying the cost for that. We're not increasing the tax base. We just continue to move the district out.
To that point,
Senator Vandiver, I could just for one moment interject. I think a very important fact here, we have not, once a TIF expires, we have not then gone back in and created a new TIF, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we've not done that this year. We didn't do it last year. But that means that if yours hasn't yet expired yet, you may have more time before you seek an extension. And so I've asked council, and I think the expiration of your current TIF district is not until 2015. Council, is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And so you may not need this legislation at all, but I am concerned, as Senator Bach says, that you don't have a current plan to develop the other portion of your TIF district. You don't have a developer, but you have a couple of years before the TIF actually expires in order to do that work. You don't need this legislation this year in order to continue on. Mr.
Yes,
Mayor.
Madam Chair, in response to that, I think one piece that hasn't been mentioned is there is more to going on than just what's been mentioned. On this existing site, we have been working with the current owner. There is a unique opportunity this year for us to purchase this property from him. He does a significant amount of development here and in Minot, North Dakota. He has significant gains right now as a result of some other projects and is looking to sell it to us for a discount, in part for tax purposes, and is willing to share those by gifting a significant portion of the property to the city this year, which would be of value to him this year and not in future years. And so we are working closely, and we expect that in the next weeks to a month or so to have that form into more clarity. Under the legislation, this requires still formal approval by the county, the school district, and the city. And the idea of it being here is that by having this tool as we work on this Northland Mall project this year, to put this deal together, this would be a piece that is a critical piece for us to be able to do that, and that's why we're here now and not, say, next year, is that we see there being some urgency and a unique opportunity right now that will exist today and not next year so that we can put a deal together in north on the Northland Mall site that will include private redevelopment, possibly with the current owner retaining or being a development partner, or with others that we've talked with. So it's not a pie-in-the-sky plan. It's just hadn't up to this point been mentioned, but it's certainly a piece, and we see this as either it all happens or it doesn't happen. It's not that we're going to do City Hall and not do the Northland Mall. It would be this deal comes together in the next couple months or not, and this is an important piece that if the legislation is in place, then we can deal with that, have part of our consideration and ultimately having to make our decision and seeking the final approval from the county and the school district, who have been supportive up to this point.
Senator Vandeveer?
That was my point, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, it's a redevelopment TIF is just that. It's to redevelop a piece of property. It's not to just buy a piece of property because you happen to have a willing seller, and maybe you'll find a developer, or maybe even the person that you bought the property from, he now gets a cash payment that all property taxpayers in the city have to pay for, and he might want to come back in the redevelopment himself after he's gotten bought out of the property. I just think that's problematic. I mean, if there was a real project here, I mean, I would be absolutely batting 1,000% to help you. But if it's just to buy the property from the person that has it now and you're going to capture TIF an extra 10 years, I just think that's not what TIF is intended for.
And I would say one other piece there, Senator Vandeveer, you might have looked at the amendment that we just passed for Senator Peterson, which allows the city not to pay property taxes on property it owns for what do we say, 10 years?
10 years.
Seems long to me, but that's how I voted, members. Senator Loomer.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just going to make that comment to Senator Bach. Senator Bach, you voted on the previous amendment to extend it at least one more year, not to allow a political subdivision to make payment on taxes.
I voted no.
Oh, you voted no.
Yes.
You were with me.
I was with you.
And
we lost.
And
we lost.
And me.
And we were with
lost.
The chair. You and I were with the chair.
No.
And we lost.
So it's these others on the committee that seems to be the issue. I beg your forgiveness, Senator Bach.
If you keep talking, you
consistent.
Might get a reconsideration there, Senator Loomer. Any further questions, comments? Are there other folks that would like to testify on the A9 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A9 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Thank you for being here. Other amendments for the for Senate File 2136 is amended.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Chamberlain.
One more.
Bring it on, Senator Chamberlain.
A5, and I don't think this promises to be any less troublesome. A5 amendment, Madam Chair.
What is he doing?
I hope Senator Vandeveer didn't leave.
He did.
Oh, well, that's problematic.
Whoops.
Maybe I can talk really slow until he gets back, Madam Chair. What this does, this goes back to a last year's Green Acres legislation, and that legislation, I believe I recall that we also included that in that legislation at that time, that if an applicant was not satisfied or wanted to appeal the Green Acres application, that they would be able to make an appeal to the local Board of Appeal and Equalization. Instead of going to tax court, currently that did not get passed last year. That was pulled out. Make another attempt to have a brief discussion. All this simply does is if an applicant is denied Green Acres application for Green Acres is denied, they can go to the local Board of Equalization instead of going to the tax court. So it kind of simplifies the process a bit for them. And the local Board of Equalization is qualified and credible, filled with local elected officials. And Senator Vandeveer might be willing to offer more on that.
Senator Vandeveer, something similar to this passed this committee last year and was in the original tax bill that the governor vetoed. But it may have been a little bit different than the one we have here. Senator Vandeveer, can you speak to that?
I
I thought that, and we haven't been able to locate it, but that that was optional for the locals to...
It was.
...to do that, and I asked staff to look for it, and they came back with, in 2010, it was in the tax bill, and in 2011, with this language, I believe, maybe they could help us with it. But, and I had thought it was different, too, in that it was optional, but they weren't able to locate that. And they actually had the omnibus bills, and it was using this language, so...
My understanding, Senator Vandeveer, was that the Board of Equalization then had they could or may hear the appeal, but were not required to hear the appeal, and that may be different than this is drafted. Mr. Sylvia, can you speak to that?
Madam Chair, the way the amendment is drafted is that if an assessor denies an application for evaluation, the applicant may appeal. The way it's drafted, it doesn't necessarily require that the local Board of Appeal and Equalization hear it, but that the applicant may appeal it. But it doesn't have any specific language requiring the board to hear the applicant's appeal.
And Mr. Sylvia and Senator Vandeveer, originally we had language that was far more encompassing that would have allowed any Board of Equalization to hear these types of appeals if they chose to hear them. And it wouldn't be on a case-by-case basis, but it would be on a much more comprehensive basis. They would make a decision as a Board of Equalization. Either they were or were not going to be hearing these types of appeals. So I think this may need a little bit more work. That I don't mean to dissuade you, Senator Vandeveer. I think we can do, if that's your intention, I think we can get this language drafted for you. Can you speak to the intention on that, Senator Vandeveer?
Yes, Madam Chair, and that would be my intention, as you described it, that it be optional for those local boards. The reason we need to do this is there's a lot of cases where I have constituents call, and they've just been removed from Green Acres, and the only thing that they can do is end up going to tax court. And I think it's a classification of real estate is something that the Board of Equalization has shown it can do and it could do. And in this case, I don't think it would be anything out of the ordinary for it if they chose to. And I think that part of it is important, that they choose whether they take these up or not. So,
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Vandeveer, you get an A for persistence. But if we could have the assessors of the department come forward and talk about the ability of these local boards to do valuation assessments, I think it would be helpful for the committee to understand if these folks are qualified to do this work.
Mr. Vanosik, welcome to the committee.
Morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanosik on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. It's been, I'm racking my memory for some of the nuances surrounding this amendment. This is of great concern to assessors. As you all know, we spent a lot of time over many, many years working on Green Acres legislation and some changes to that, and some changes to the changes, and some changes to those changes. And this amendment and a version of this was adopted last year, but was not enacted as the chair indicated. That was a little more encompassing than this, but this would allow a local board of appeal and equalization, such as a city council, such as a town board, to be in the position of being administering property tax law surrounding Green Acres, which is extraordinarily difficult to administer and complex, and for the folks who are trained and do this day in and day out. The local board of appeal and equalization, those folks do get training once, maybe every 4 years, give or take a year, and it's on the valuation, and they're able to adjust valuation somewhere in the range of 1%, not go in and actually make determinations of eligibility for Green Acres, which in statute, and I don't have it with me, is there's quite a quite a bit there, and then the bulletin that revenue has put out. There's eligibility tests that number four or five items, and so we would be worrisome that within, you know, from county to county, from township to township, and within individual jurisdictions, you're going to have unequal treatment of like properties, and we worry about the consistency of the application of law when you throw this into the hands of a local board. So happy to answer questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Vandeveer, I thought we had just done the county board, but we must have had conversations about this over the last couple of years, because council has done their work to find the bill that we passed last year, and they're confirming that the bill is exactly as you see in the A5. Is that right, Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair, yes.
Which is
Senator Vandeveer.
Might have been a drafting error, because I do recall coming in with, and I had asked Senator Chamberlain, or actually when we ordered up this amendment, we ordered the one that ended up in the omnibus bill, which should have been the correct one, but I do know that.
Well, Senator Vandeveer, and to Mr. Vanosik's point, I think the county board at that level, the Board of Equalization at that level, is perfectly capable of making a decision whether it wants to weigh into these issues of valuation for green acres or not. And the assessors sit on the Board of Equalization, are participants. And I think at the county level, you're talking about professionals who know what they're doing and can advise and work together on this. I think consistency is important. We can create some consistency across the 87 counties, but I think that there needs to be an answer beyond just a tax court appeal. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the problem is that this is not just a valuation issue. This is a classification issue, and the classifications are really laid out in statute. And what you're going to end up with if you have a Board of Equalization in one county allowing a parcel in and in another county not in, we're going to kind of go backwards to where we were prior to the changes, where we have a large number of differing properties being treated differently across the state. And we shouldn't have state law being not uniformly enforced. And this is going backwards toward uniformity, I think. And it's not a valuations question. It's whether these properties qualify for the program, which is a classification issue, which is defined in state law.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with this. I would support this amendment. I think, the Board of Equalization deals with dollar amounts, and I would say that when it comes to classification, you're having the assessor decide what classification, what dollar amounts, and I think you're underestimating, the Board of Equalization. Certainly the assessor's there to give their point of view and their rationale for doing what they're doing, and obviously they need to look at the highest and best use of the property and their argument for changing classifications. But I think you should allow a landowner or a resident at least a opportunity to appeal their case to the Board of Equalization without having to go through the expense of hiring an attorney and end up in tax court. And you're certainly going to have properties that are valued different. Their like properties might have different valuations and certainly might have different classifications, especially when we talk about some of the farmland. Some assessors say if it's 10 acres or less, it's got to be homestead residential. It cannot be agricultural. And when the majority of land might qualify for CRP or some other federal program that certainly identifies it as agricultural land. And this is just allowing one additional avenue of relief for a taxpayer, a property owner. there's no guarantee if you take it to court that you're going to get the same result dependent upon who the judge is hearing the case. So I would strongly advocate for this. This just gives another opportunity for a taxpayer, a property owner, to seek relief. And the assessor is going to be there at that meeting giving his or her rationale for the change in classification, for the amount of dollar amount that's assessed to that property. And I don't think we should underestimate the common sense that the that those boards are going to bring. And I think if there is a question, I think there's more of a tendency for them to support their assessor, and then the property owner needs to go to the next level.
Madam Chair.
Very briefly, Senator Skoy, council is drafting a new version of an amendment, Senator Vandeveer, and it would make it permissive at the level of the county board. And I will be supportive of that, Senator Vandeveer, because as a former member of a county board, the assessor works for the county board members. They work for the county, and that board of equalization with all of them present would be the best ones to decide, number one, whether they want to hear an appeal and have the expertise to hear the appeal, and number two, to hold the assessor accountable for whatever explanation they may have for the valuation of that property. Senator Vandeveer.
I think, Madam Chair, though, that we use the Board of Equalization because a number of local governments, the cities, do their own assessing. So I think we did have it on that at that level of the board, that's all right.
And Senator Vandeveer, from me only, I think Mr. Vanosik makes a good point that you don't want the townships making these decisions at the Board of Equalization level or the city. It makes sense at the county level because the assessor works at the county level. The assessor offers, services at the more local level, but I think for consistency's sake, we're better off with an amendment that authorizes the county board of equalization to consider an appeal.
Then, Madam Chair,
Senator Vandeveer,
a technical question. Our counties, so you would just use only the county board of equalization?
The appeal would be to the county board of equalization and not to any other level other than the tax court. So we're not creating a bunch of different levels of potential appeal. I don't think that's that, in my personal view, would be good policy. Senator Skoy, did you want to speak again? And then we're going to hear from Ms. Von Mosch from the Department of Revenue.
I'll wait.
Senator Skoy. Okay.
I'll wait.
Ms. Von Mosch?
Mr. Nord is going to speak.
Okay. Mr. Nord, welcome back to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Jason Nord with the Department of Revenue. Many of the points have already been raised, but Green Acres is not just it's not a classification issue. It's a special program, and both county boards and local boards do not have any power to make decisions about special programs. Just like you wouldn't want a local board or a county board to make decisions about who's eligible for a property tax refund or who gets a TIF district or who gets any other special program. Each of those programs in law have application requirements. There's lots of information that needs to be included in those applications. There's all kinds of timing deadlines. And really, it's the expertise of the assessor that gets regular training, regular materials from the Department of Revenue. We do our best to keep all assessors informed of all the requirements. That kind of training does not get to the county boards or the local boards. So they would be making decisions that really outside the purview of what county and local boards are all about without full information. And it was really the inconsistent application of Green Acres that started all of the turmoil that we've been through in the last several years over Green Acres. So to take a step backwards and to start allow kind of uninformed boards to make decisions and yield inconsistent application of the law does not seem like a step in the correct direction.
Mr. Vanosik, very briefly, and members, we have session at 11 o'clock. I know there's at least one other amendment. So if you've already made your point, please know that we've heard you. But if you've got something else to add to this conversation, we'll hear it. Mr. Vanosik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, 2 points. One, tax court, you don't necessarily have to hire an attorney. You can just go in. It's kind of like a small claims court. It's not, and these folks are very familiar with property tax law and, the administration of it, whereas the local board, as was stated, they're making decisions based on valuation that really have a small effect on what your end property tax bill is, whereas a Green Acres, this special program eligibility, you're talking about annual benefit of thousands to tens of thousands of dollars a year, whether you're in the, in this special program or not. The second point is, back in the 90s, even before this, this language has never been in law, the city of Maple Grove took it upon themselves, acting as the local board of appeal and equalization. They just granted Green Acres to everybody who showed up. It was somewhere around a dozen folks. And, of course, that had to go back and be corrected. And I don't know where that enforcement came, but, when you get folks showing up to their local board of appeal and equalization, be it the township, be it the city, things happen that really ends up being a real inconsistent treatment of taxpayers of like properties.
Thank you. Members, I would remind you that we have all voted on this issue before more than once. Senator Chamberlain, I'm going to ask you to withdraw the A5. We've got council that is drafting a new version of this amendment. Other comments or questions from members on this, we're going to come back to it, Senator Vandeveer, but I do want to hear Senator Skoy's amendment in the meantime. Senator Chamberlain.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the A5.
Senator Chamberlain. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did offer the A. Get my glasses here. I can't see anything without them. The A14 amendment earlier, and you weren't here. I understand that you would think it would be appropriate for the committee to vote on this amendment. This is the amendment that extends, St. Paul's bond authority is extended in the bill. This would change their dollar request from $30 million to $25 million. They are currently at $20 million, and 10 years ago they were at $15 million. I think they've done a pretty good job, and so I would offer the A14 amendment. This amendment I offered earlier and withdrew.
Senator Skoy, questions or comments about the A14 amendment? Senator Skoy, this was originally proposed at $30 million?
$30 million.
Is that right? And it was part of the mortgage deed tax, and so we've separated them? Or was this always a standalone bill?
This was a standalone bill, Madam Chair, that would extend the sunset on St. Paul's capital improvement budget program that allows the city to bond for publicly owned infrastructure projects. They've had this for a number of years since 1971. It currently sunsets every 10 years. We're extending the sunset, which is in the bill. We thank you for that. And I just thought with the, with the good management that St. Paul has shown, and that there is inflation on these things, that a small increase would be appropriate. And I thought the committee could vote on it.
Madam Chair?
Senator Howe.
I'm trying to have the right recollection here, but I thought we talked about $25 million, and we had already adjusted the sunset, but did we not look at the amount and the sunset on that? I thought we had already proposed that.
That's been done, Senator Howe. We did the sunset to 2015. I think that was your amendment, Senator Howe. And so now separately we have this request from the city of St. Paul to pardon me?
Separate.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Separate issues.
Yes, I know. That's what I just said.
Okay.
I said that we already acted on the sunset for the ERF. We already acted on that earlier in an amendment. This A14 addresses only the bonding authority for the city of St. Paul. That's what I was doing with clarifying for Senator Howe.
Okay.
And the sunset on this, Madam Chair, is to 2024.
Well,
in the bill.
All right.
Yes. In the bill. Yes.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Howe, when this is, we talked about this a number of weeks ago when we first brought this bill forward, and part of the committee discussion was that $30 million might be a little too high, but there might be some willingness on the committee to compromise and go halfway in between. Yeah. The committee bill that Senator Artman brought forth does include the extension, which we appreciate, but I just thought, being that there had appeared to be some support on the committee, to do a smaller increase in the bond authority, that I would bring that forward and see if the committee was willing to do that or not. But the major issue for St. Paul is the extension, and that's in the bill.
And the only testimony to the contrary, Senator Skoy, was that they have not used the $20 million yet.
Yeah, they're not currently
at the
cap.
The only factor to the negative here is that they haven't used it yet, but it seems to me that a $5 million increase is a little bit more reasonable than the $10 million, which would have increased it by 50%. So other questions or comments from members? All those in favor of the A14 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The amendment is adopted. I wasn't as loud as Senator Chamberlain in my opposition, but we still didn't win, Senator Chamberlain. Other amendments to Senate file 2136. We are still waiting for an amendment or for a drafted amendment for Senator Vandeveer. Are there folks that would like to testify on the underlying bill as amended, Senate file 2136, because it is my intention that we are going to vote on this in the next couple of minutes?
Madam Chair, I have a hand up.
Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and I appear to express concern regarding Sections 1 and 2 of Article 10 of the underlying bill. This was a bill of Senator Roebling, but it was substantially amended when it was added to this bill to add additional information, which, frankly, in I believe the county auditor's point of view, exceeds the capacity of the current truth and taxation statement to effectively convey. Right now, the original Senator Roebling proposal required that detail be provided on the levy of those special taxing districts that exceed 25% of the total. That will add at least two, if not three, lines to the existing truth and taxation statement. And that, frankly, is problematic enough. This will, just that, would entail new programming costs, potentially new mailing costs because of the size of the statement. But now the bill has amended, requires that contact information be provided for every special taxing district. That means that address and phone number information has to be provided for up to 9 different entities, because in the state currently there are specific pieces of geography called uniform or unique taxing jurisdictions where there are up to 9 special taxing jurisdictions currently exercising or having levy authority. In this statement, I've just included room for 4 of those. And you'll see that with a legal size document, I can't frankly actually fit this at 10.5-point type.
Mr. Carlson, in the interest of time, mm-hmm. I believe you and I talked about this. Mm-hmm. And I, as far as I know, you did not ask for an amendment to be prepared. But I have been willing to say that one contact should be enough. The county should be able to redirect any taxpayer to the appropriate special taxing district to get more information. I think that's one of the things that we can do to accommodate the counties here, is to have just one contact for purposes of all the different special taxing districts. And so Mr. Sylvia is prepared to offer an oral amendment to the underlying bill to address that, and I wish Mr. Carlson there had been an amendment prepared for this in advance. Mr. Sylvia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment would be on page 125. On line 6, we would strike the word each and insert one, so that the sentence would read, provide identifying and contact information for one special taxing district, removing the need for each special taxing district.
Members, that is intended to alleviate the concern that we're going to have all these different taxing districts listed, and it shouldn't then go over the printing requirement. Hopefully will not have an impact. Senator Howe?
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, when you say one special taxing district, could we include maybe the Superior taxing district, or, you know, somewhere so you're not getting a watershed taxing district, but something that is the...
I'm going to we have not had an offer of that amendment yet, and with further guidance, Mr. Sylvia will offer or will provide for us language for an oral amendment that will make the county the designated point of contact for all special taxing districts. That would be my intent, and I'm seeing people nodding. Mr. Sylvia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that suggestion, on page 125, line 6, after the new word one, we would insert county so that the line would read, provide identifying and contact information for one county special taxing district.
Members? Mr. Carlson, final comment?
Madam Chair, I think I understand your intent. I'm not sure that the language accomplishes what you intend, that the county provide that information for every special taxing district.
Well, and Mr. Carlson, that's why I said I wish that you would have worked on an amendment following the conversation that we had on this. But if you have further technical corrections to help us implement the intention of this committee, bring them forward and we can offer it when this bill is heard on the Senate floor. All those in favor of the oral amendment, Senator Dibble.
As the smaller mosquito control.
What I'd like to do, Senator Dibble, if the committee will accommodate, is allow Senate counsel the authority to draft the language to implement our intention. If there's anything that goes wrong here, we'll fix it on the Senate floor, but the intention is that residents who receive these property tax statements will be directed for all inquiries to the county. And then the county, if can provide the information about the special taxing districts and their authority and their levies. I'm seeing nods on that. With that, Senator Marty moves that amendment. That amendment. But Mr. Sylvia, do you have good advice now on what we're trying to do here?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Bach.
Can Tony provide the information or direct the taxpayer to the mosquito control district where we're
the latter.
Ladder. Right. The direction to the appropriate taxing district. Yes. All in agreement on that, Senator Marty moves that amendment. All those in favor of the Marty amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Vandeveer, Senator Chamberlain has an amendment to offer on your behalf.
Madam Chair, we have the updated A18 amendment. What this does is I think clearly it makes clear that the Board of Appeal and Equalization has the option of hearing these appeals. They do not have to hear them. They may decide to hear them or not hear them.
Senator Vandeveer.
That would work for me. Here is accountability. That's what we're looking for. And taxpayers, without going to court, would have a way to have accountability here with someone who you know, look at and they can appeal, and it's that simple.
Well, and Senator Vandeveer, there's nothing to stop this Board of Equalization from seeking counsel from the Department of Revenue. In fact, they would be encouraged to do so and seek further guidance before they make any decision about whether they want to hear the appeal. And then once they've heard the appeal, they could certainly hear any information from the Department of Revenue. Senator Dibble.
Senator Scoy, I think years and just consistent. Big part of the human.
Well, and Senator Dibble, the assessor involved here certainly can seek the counsel and the testimony at the Board of Equalization from the Department of Revenue. Senator Vandeveer, final thoughts on the A18 amendment.
Final thoughts are that the problems we had with Green Acres were arbitrary and, you know, documental application by the department and by excesses in certain counties, and this not by allowing people to have an appeal. I don't think that was any of the problems ever brought up about Green Acres. So,
thank you. All those in favor of the A18 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. And all those opposed, same sign. There being seven ayes and five nays, the amendment is adopted. Thank you. And now on the underlying bill, Ms. Von Mosch, are there critical comments that you'd like to make here? Otherwise, we want to adjourn, have cake, and go to session. So, Ms. Von Mosch, you're between all these members in this room and their cake and session.
Chair,
no pressure, Ms. Von Mosch.
Brief, but I would like to thank you for including the department technical and policy bills in the omnibus bills and for letting them remain fairly intact and unchanged, and we appreciate that very much. I have just a few concerns I wanted to highlight just to be on the record, and so I'll just touch on them very briefly. The solicitor nexus study, we are looking at that. There may be some potential costs of doing that, but we would like to talk with you about the intent behind that. There was an amendment put on this morning on the A11 amendment dealing with local lodging taxes, and we are looking at that language also, and we have some concerns about how that might interact with the tax that was passed last year, the provision that was passed last year on the travel intermediary language, and we are working with some of the proponents behind the scenes to look at that language, but I just wanted to let the committee and you know that.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Von Mosch. So on the underlying bill, Senate file 2136, Senator Michelle would move that the bill be, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The bill is passed. And members, the cake is in honor of our great staff. I wish you would just take one moment, because the staff in this committee has worked so well and so professionally, and I hope you'll take an opportunity to thank them. I thank my colleagues and all that were here to provide their expertise over the last 2 years to the members of this committee. Thank
Madam
you.
Chair,
we're adjourned. Senator Rest.
We would also like to thank you for conducting this committee in a very professional way. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Nothing further. Leaving on a high note, we're adjourned.